This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
We're going to shift the focus from people with developmental disabilities to their siblings. My personal experience providing primary care is learning from several siblings of patients that I provided care for, who would always come to their siblings, the siblings with disabilities, doctor visits, who shared with me their anxiety about what may happen to their siblings with disabilities, their parents who are providing daily care, sometimes 24/7, and what their role should be. And I realized that we had not paid sufficient attention to siblings, which brings me to our next speaker, Emily Hall, who is director of the Sibling Support Project, the first national program dedicated to recognizing, promoting, and addressing the lifelong and ever-changing concerns of millions of siblings of people with developmental health and mental health concerns. Please welcome Ms. Emily Hall.
Thank you so much, John, and thanks to UCSF for inviting us to be part of this incredible event. That's a tough act to follow, that last presentation, so important and so timely. So I am really grateful to be able to focus now on siblings. Well, I'm pleased today to be talking about how sibling support can really be a catalyst for family empowerment. I have no disclaimers to share with you today. Sorry for the disappointment. Maybe next time. And as John said, the Sibling Support Project, for those of you who are not familiar with us, we are the first national program dedicated entirely to supporting siblings of people with developmental health and mental health concerns. We are a proud program of Kindering, which is Washington State's largest neurodevelopmental center. And we are located right outside of Seattle. We do our work with siblings in a number of ways. First of all, by educating other professionals, families, the general community, the media about siblings' experiences and why it's important to support siblings. We have a number of publications written not only about siblings, but largely by siblings. We're really proud of that fact. As I said, we talk with the media every chance we get. And then we also sort of provide more direct support through training and through some online communities for siblings of different ages. Probably what we're best known for is creating a program called Sib Shops. And Sib Shops, they started in 1982 at the University of Washington. They are workshops for siblings of children with developmental health and mental health concerns, hence the word Sib Shop. And Sib Shops are really our answer for the same kind of common sense peer support parents get from a good parent-to-parent program or a parent support group. But as you can see from these pictures, Sib Shops are based largely around fun and play because we're working with kids. And all of you who work with kids know the importance of play. I, in the next four slides, put together a list of all of the Sib Shops that we could locate so far in California. So I just want to share those with you. And if you are interested in knowing more about these Sib Shops, you can come to our website, which is just siblingsupport.org, and reach out directly to these Sib Shops. If you work with families who have siblings roughly between the ages of 8 and 13 who might be interested in meeting other brothers and sisters, talking about the ups and downs of what it's like to have a sibling with support needs, getting that sort of peer support, and just really connecting and knowing that they're not alone, right? That they're not the only kiddo who has a brother or sister with fill in the blank, right? Autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, any number of different kinds of support needs. The same way it's reassuring for parents to connect with one another, to realize they're not walking this path alone. It can be very, very reassuring for siblings. So I told you a little bit about how we support siblings. I want to take a step back and talk a little bit about why it's important to support siblings. And some of you, are pediatricians. Some of you work in the disability field. Many of you probably consider yourselves as being sort of part of that family support network, right? And I'll bet if you think about typically the kinds of supports that are available for families under all the different umbrellas that we work with, when we think about family support, if we're really honest about what that family support looks like, most of the time what we're talking about is parent support, and rightfully so. Parents deserve all the help in the world. All of us parents, any old kind of parent, none of us comes into this role with an instruction manual. And so particularly when you have a child with some extra support needs, it can be really, really helpful to have that extra support. We also want to recognize that siblings are important members of their families and their communities. And when I sort of advocate and talk with people about why we do the work we do, I typically share the following few points. First of all, what we know from the research is that sibling experiences really do parallel parent experiences. Just about anything that we can say about being the parent of a child with support needs, we can put ditto marks on for siblings. Yet, as I mentioned, if we think about the services and supports that are available for parents as opposed to those that are available for siblings, it's kind of easy to see who's getting the short end of the stick. So we're working to change that. We also know that sibling issues are lifespan issues, and I really want to challenge you to think about this, that brothers and sisters are most likely going to be in the lives of the people with disabilities longer than anyone. Okay, certainly longer than any of us service providers. And probably longer even than parents. This is a relationship that can easily exceed 6, maybe even 7 decades, which is a long time. Siblings also spend a good quantity of time together, a good deal of time together. If we look over the course of the lifespan, what we know, and this is not just true of siblings to people with support needs, but all siblings, siblings spend a good deal of time together. They have a high level of involvement in each other's lives, particularly when they're young, when they're children, and then again towards the end of life. So if we look at sort of the continuum of the life course, we recognize that siblings have a lot to do with one another. We also know that the time they spend together is quality time. And I think this is especially true for children, because I will tell you that as big a fan as I am of inclusion and inclusive classrooms, if they're supported correctly, that's a whole other webinar. But I will tell you that no classmate in an inclusive classroom will have as great an impact on the social development of a child with support needs as his or her brothers or sisters. And so that time that they spend together is very important. Siblings are 24/7 social models. And finally, siblings are the next generation of caregivers. This is something that certainly families are recognizing. And we have statistics that tell us that we now more than ever have people with disabilities who are living longer, thanks to the community-based excellent healthcare and other support services that are available, community-based, and routinely are outliving their parents, right? Which was not the case 40 years ago. And so we also know that as parents age, and maybe become less able to care for their now adult children with disabilities, and as those parents also pass away, it's often siblings who step in to provide some kind of support for their brothers and sisters. But I will tell you, if you spent 5 minutes in one of our online communities for adult siblings, you would hear very quickly that there is a whole community of brothers and sisters out there, adults, who are very uncertain about how to fill this role and how to do a good job as a caregiver of their brother and sister, and how to balance those caregiving responsibilities with their own lives, their own busy lives. So I want to share now just very, very briefly some of the unique concerns and opportunities we recognize siblings experience. And I'll start with the concerns. I always like to start with the bad news first. And please know that our next slide is going to focus on opportunities, the good stuff, which there is plenty of. But these are just a few of the common themes that we see arise when we talk with siblings in our sib shops, when we review sibling research, which there's plenty of, and when we work directly with adult siblings. These are sort of the unique concerns that arise as themes for many siblings. The need for information. I could do a whole webinar on this, that siblings, This really is one of the biggest ways that the sibling experience parallel the parent experience, that siblings need information about that diagnosis, about that disability. John talked earlier about his siblings, the siblings of his patients coming in and being really worried about their brothers and sisters and what was going to happen to them in the future. This is a confirmation that yes, those brothers and sisters, they need information about what's going on too, particularly children, and it needs to be an age-appropriate language. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Over-identification, really identifying with the disability to an extent that is not realistic, not based on the reality of the situation. And you might reason as a child, if I can catch my sister's strep throat, why wouldn't I be able to catch her spina bifida, right? For a child, you know, that's not so illogical. It's not such an illogical leap. Isolation, siblings feel isolated, I think in many of the same ways as parents do, right? This feeling that no one outside of your family can relate to your family, right? Can relate to your experience. Siblings also can feel isolated, not just from peers or the general community, but from parents. A lot of siblings don't want to bring home any news that isn't good. And so they sort of isolate those feelings and experiences that they feel are maybe not so positive. Increased caregiving, this can happen from a young age. We know that this is true from the research more often of sisters and older sisters in particular, true more so for siblings in large and lower income families. That's the case. Resentment, again, if I just had more time, we could talk about the big three: resentment, embarrassment, and guilt, right? That's sort of the trifecta when it comes to siblings. The resentment of, you know, when family life kind of tends to revolve around one person, you know, and maybe the needs of that child, it's easy to understand why brothers and sisters could feel angry, resentful, jealous of that, right? When all of the family resources, parents' time, attention, our ability to do things like go out into the community, when that is all driven by the needs of one person, again, it's pretty easy to see why siblings might feel a little bit resentful of that. Embarrassment, you know, when our brothers and sisters maybe don't behave in socially expected ways, that could be embarrassing, particularly for those tweens and teens who just want to be like everyone else. Guilt. How can I count the ways, all the different ways that siblings feel guilty? Survivor's guilt, guilt for maybe surpassing social or developmental milestones that their brothers and sisters might not. Guilt for typical conflicts that brothers and sisters have. I think all of us can look back and remember having arguments or fights with our brothers and sisters. For siblings of kids with support needs, that can sort of hit a little bit differently, right? Especially after the argument's over and they start to feel really, really guilty for the way they maybe yelled at their brother or sister. And they start to say, I know it's not his fault. It's the disability. And why did I get so mad? The pressure to achieve, you know, we siblings, we are just kind of sometimes classic overachievers. And if I have any of you out there in the audience, please just, I can't see you, but raise your hands, raise it high and proud, because we know that we're sort of textbook siblings, that many siblings do feel this heightened need to achieve. And I've heard siblings describe this as people say, I feel like I had to achieve for both of us, for me and my sister, or for me and my brother, right? I had to do that for my parents. I wanted them to be proud for both of us. And it's funny because sometimes parents say to us, why does my kid need a sib shop? They're getting straight A's. They're doing great. And I always think, oh, those are the ones I worry about the most, you know, kind of joking, but, you know, we have to think about what's going on below the surface. And this, especially for all of you practitioners who work with families and who see these, you know, maybe perfect little siblings walk through the door, it's important to think about what's going on behind the mask. And then finally, future concerns. Who will take care of my brother or sister in the future? Where will they live? Will we have enough money to support them? And these are concerns that even young siblings raise in sib shops, in some of our publications. And of course, as they get older, teens, adult siblings are thinking about, will I find a partner who's willing to accept not only my fantastic quirks, but also the fact that, you know, a future with me could mean a future as a caregiver for my brother or sister, right? These are a lot to think about. Genetic concerns. Will I have a child with the same disability as my brother or sister? The great news is there's much more genetic testing these days than there has been in the past. The tricky thing is that, you know, it's sometimes not easy to come to a conclusion. Those results might not be totally conclusive. And it might not be easy still to make a decision about what you want to do once you have those results. Okay, let's flip the switch to the good things, the unique opportunities, just like parents who say, you know, this wasn't a club that I necessarily thought I wanted to join, but now that I'm here, I have to admit there are some pretty great opportunities that have come my way. Tolerance, right? Patience, the understanding that, you know, sometimes life is not going to go my way and I'm going to survive it. That's okay. Advocacy, right? The ability to advocate for others, the ability to have insight on the human condition. I sort of consider that to be wisdom. And we have even these young siblings that come into sib shops and they talk about things like the difference between ignorance and stupidity. You know, and they say, well, if someone's teasing your brother or sister and they don't know what's going on, like maybe they just need some more information, right? That's ignorance. But if they do know what's going on and they're still making fun of your sib, well, that's just stupid. And those are not people I want to be friends with, right? Which brings us to maturity. A very, very unique and common attribute of many, many siblings. I think the flip side of maybe being exposed to adversity at a younger age, humor. If we have any family members out there, right? Who's with me in saying that we have a maybe unique and slightly twisted sense of humor? Can I get any yeses on that one? Vocation, many siblings go into helping professions. We have research to back this up. Pride. We recently had someone post in one of our teen groups. I'm so proud. They said, I can't tell my friends this. Nobody will understand, but you guys will understand. I'm so proud of my brother. He's 13. He just learned how to finally tie his shoes. And I am so proud of him. Right. So pride in terms of the accomplishments, large and small, of our brothers and sisters. Inspiration. If my brother or sister can go out into this world that isn't always so accepting of people who are different, and go out into that world every single day and live their life and knock it out of the park, well, I have nothing to be afraid of. I'm going to go out there and do the same. Appreciation for their families, for their own health, for their opportunities. And last but not least, loyalty, right? You know what? My family's not perfect, but they're mine and I will protect them until the very end. I want to talk about sibling support as a catalyst for family empowerment. And I like to think about, you know, the family unit as a mobile. And I think that it's pretty easy to understand this metaphor. If there's too much pressure put on any one of those branches of the mobile, you're going to have an imbalance. And so the way I think about supporting siblings is that if we remove that pressure from that branch, which is being weighted down, it restores balance to the entire family. And so supporting siblings really can have a very powerful impact on the entire family. So I want to share with you 7 strategies to be able to do this. Okay, very practical, everyday strategies. If you're a parent, I hope this resonates with you as something that, yes, I can do this. If you are a professional who works with families, you might want to jot these down. These are really simple everyday strategies, okay? The first is to provide siblings with age-appropriate information in culturally responsive ways. And I think this is especially important for you professionals, for medical practitioners, especially because you have access to families. It is so important for siblings to have access to all of you. And I often encourage parents to talk to their providers to say, you know what, I'm bringing Josh in next week for therapy, physical therapy, fill in the blank, or bringing him in for an appointment. You know, Josh's younger sister, Sarah, has some questions about, you know, what's going on and what kind of treatment, you know, what kind of treatment things you guys do here. And she doesn't really know like what Josh does when he comes here. And she has a lot of questions about that. So I thought it would be great if you could spend maybe 10 minutes with Sarah at the end of the appointment with Josh next week and just talk with her and see if you can answer any of her questions. And the really nice thing about that is that those of you who have kids, or maybe you can remember being a kid, you know that if a parent, right, if as a parent, I tell my 8-year-old something, it's mostly going to go in one ear and probably out the other ear because I'm just mom. But if another adult says the exact same thing, holy smokes, wow, now we're talking. This is like really important information. And so sometimes even just having direct access to another adult who is knowledgeable and resourceful can be really helpful for siblings to be able to ask those questions and to be able to be validated and taken seriously. There are also so many written sources of information. If you are a practitioner, if you work for an organization that has a website that talks about the kinds of disabilities you support, we hope that there's a section on that website which is geared towards young readers, not just for siblings, but for children in general in the community who might be interested in what you do. Very, very important for siblings to have that information. And I talk about cultural responsiveness in terms of what is going to be an appropriate, respectful, and meaningful way to communicate this information to the particular family you're working with, right? And I feel like maybe the presentation before me might have talked about some of this. The second strategy is to provide siblings with opportunities to meet other siblings, really at any age. This is throughout the lifespan. Of course, we think Sib Shops is a great way to do this, particularly for school-age children. That's sort of the classic age range that Sib Shops were designed for. But, you know, if you work for an organization, you have a family event, maybe you have an annual picnic or a holiday gathering, why not carve out some time for siblings to get together, maybe do an activity together? If you are a parent, maybe you have a play date for your kiddo with support needs, see if there's a sibling, you know, at home who could have a play date with your other kiddo as well. Very important for siblings to know that they're not walking this path alone. Encourage good communication with typically developing children throughout the lifespan. I really, really support the idea of active listening. And for those of you who aren't familiar with active listening principles, there's a great book called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. You know, I think that most of the time when children especially share something with us, it's not because they need us to solve their problems. Most of the time, they just need for us to listen. And so if we can be really present when children are talking with us, if we can acknowledge what they say through verbal and nonverbal communication prompts, if we can ask questions and really validate them, we're going to do a huge service to siblings to support them, right? And if you forget everything I've said in this close to coming up on 30 minutes, if you forget everything I say about siblings, please just remember this, that siblings want to be heard and validated, right? They want to know it's okay to be really mad at your sibling sometime. They want to know it's okay to feel like the world's not a fair place sometimes. Right? And good communication, it's not about fixing things or solving problems. It's about making sure that the person talking to you feels heard and validated. This is true of adults too. We see so much in our adult groups online, adult siblings wanting to talk with their parents about future planning and not really having a welcome experience with that, and parents not feeling that that's a conversation that they're ready to have. And that can be really, really frustrating for adult siblings. So good communication, make sure siblings are heard and validated. Number four, encourage parents and caregivers to set aside special time with siblings. The great news here, folks, is that with siblings, a little goes a long way. It might be 20 minutes every night after their brother or sister goes to bed that sibling is allowed to stay up and hang out with their parents and maybe do a puzzle or watch a show or listen to music or whatever they want to do together. Maybe it's grocery shopping on a Saturday morning with dad, right? And maybe turning that into a fun, special thing that they can do together. Maybe it's keeping a journal with parents and writing notes back and forth so that when you can't physically be together, you can carve out a few minutes of every day or every other day or whenever you have time to write a little note and say, hey, I'm just thinking of you. How was your day? How was your math quiz? right? And to create that opportunity for siblings to also respond when they're able to. And I'll tell you, sometimes for siblings, it's easier to write things down than to say them out loud. So that can be also a really good communication tool to open a door to sometimes things that siblings might be a little hesitant to give voice to. Number five, learn more about life as a sibling. There are so many great books and films you can see on our website. We recommend a lot of books, especially for and about siblings. There are more and more documentaries and films. We do a lot of adult sibling panels where we bring together panels of adult siblings and we ask them to reflect upon their experiences growing up. It's a very powerful way to learn more about life as a sibling. And any of you can do this in your community. Give us a call. We'll even help you set it up. Number six, encourage parents and caregivers to reassure their children by making and sharing plans for the future. And this is really, these two things must go hand in hand, because if parents and caregivers make plans for the future, but don't consult siblings in it, maybe make assumptions about the roles that siblings will play, but don't exactly, they might kind of forget to talk with the siblings about this. The chances of that plan sort of being executed as they intend is like maybe not as great as it would be if the sibling was involved from the beginning, right? So making those plans, ideally having siblings sort of participate in those conversations to be able to talk about what roles they're willing and able to play. That is so, so important, because the truth of it is, spoiler alert, most of us siblings, we are going to be the caregivers of our brothers and sisters later in life. It's just a reality. And although the destination may be set, the path that we take to get to that destination makes all the difference as to how we come to that role. If we are able to have a voice and choices along the way, we're going to be much, much more excited about the future and much, much more willing and able to be a part of things. And then last but not least, remember, true story, the single strongest factor affecting a sibling's interpretation of the disability is the parent's interpretation of the disability. Parents really set the tone here, right? And you as practitioners working with families, you know, it's not a bad thing to remind parents of this, right? That siblings really do, they take their cues from parents. So if a parent or caregiver thinks like, wow, this is really the greatest tragedy to befall our family, chances are siblings are going to feel the same way. But if parents say, on the other hand, no, you know what? This is maybe not what was planned. It wasn't plan A. But now that we're here, we're going to embrace this situation with as much grace and maybe a little humor as possible. We have every reason to expect that siblings will follow suit. Okay. At the end of the day, you might have some bumps along the road, maybe like around adolescence, for example, but at the end of the day, siblings really are going to follow suit. So it's always, I think, super empowering to remind parents, right, that they play a very powerful role in setting the tone and in determining how are we going to approach this as a family. Thank you all so much. I can't believe how quickly 30 minutes goes by. I'm really excited to take some questions. And that's our website if you want to learn more about what we do or maybe partner with us to support siblings in your community. We would love to do that.
Well, thank you so much for all the information and tips, especially on talking with both the siblings as well as the parents of siblings who are the parents of those with disabilities. So I have a couple questions, and I think the first question, which you may have already answered, I have some parents who have said, I don't want to burden our other children, and so they don't include them in the care. And I'm wondering,
yes,
the evidence to demonstrate that if siblings are included in the care, that there are better outcomes.
Yeah. This is it's such a good question. And this is, you know, it can be kind of a fine line, right? You know, my husband always uses this expression when we're talking about, oh, should we invite these people to dinner or do whatever? And he'll say, And then I'll say, no, they're too busy. They don't want to do it. We can't. And he'll say, you know what? Let's offer them the right to refuse. And I think that that's kind of a healthy way to think about including siblings in the care of their brothers and sisters. Because you have on one hand, some siblings who are, you see them, these little helpers, you know, they really want to help and be involved. And I think that that's a really great thing. Like, we all feel really good when we help others, don't we? Like, by a show of hands, it feels really good to help other people. And at the same time, we don't necessarily want to send the message that that child's value or worth is tied to their role as a caregiver, right? That they're good because they help with their brother or sister. That is one of the nice things they do, and they are good for doing that, but they're good for other things too. They're good simply because they're them, because they're human beings. And so it's really nice to include siblings. Sometimes we talk about IEP meetings, right? So fun. Who doesn't want to go to an IEP meeting? But I'm just being sarcastic, but you know, we often say it's a really great idea to invite siblings to be part of that process, not necessarily to attend the meeting, although if they want to, maybe see what that is like, why not? But to be able to contribute their ideas, to be able to give them a sense of what is going on, what is the next transition all about? Oh, your brother's starting a new school next year. What do you think it's important for his teachers to know? That not only includes the siblings and makes them feel like they're an important part of the family, but siblings tend to know their brothers and sisters in ways that parents don't. And so a sibling might say, you know, that teacher should know that he doesn't talk, but if he's mad about something, oh yeah, he'll draw a picture about it, all right. And if that picture has a clown in it, that's really bad. You know, they know these things about their brothers and sisters in ways sometimes that parents don't. So we think include the sibling and also let them know that this is not an obligation. We want you to be part of it as much as you want to, and we're going to love you no matter what.
Wow, thank you, Clarissa.
Thank you. There's questions in the Q&A about if there's not a local group, is there an online only support network?
So interestingly, so for SIB shops, so we have an online directory of SIB shops on our website that we are going to be updating because our Google Map plugin it's a little finicky. So for the SIB shops, they are mostly community-based. They are mostly in person, but since COVID, I have to say, pre-COVID, they were all in person. We do have more SIB shops that are online. And actually there happens to be one in the Bay Area, I happen to know, that is completely virtual, and they're always happy to accept new kiddos. So that's an option. If you don't have a SIB shop in your local area, please consider becoming trained as a certified SIB shop facilitator, you know, and it's not out of reach for many people to offer SIB shops maybe once a month or once every other month. And it makes such a difference to the kiddos in your community. And then the groups for adult siblings and teens and young adults, those are all online. Those are all on Facebook. They're closed groups. We moderate them carefully. And you can find that information on our website under, I think there's a panel that's called Connect. So for the online groups, but the SIB shops, look in the directory and see which ones offer virtual, in-person, hybrid, et cetera.
So sort of a two-phase question, any good questionnaires we could have parents or siblings fill out to help assess the siblings' needs? And then kind of the related question is, how much data do we have about siblings? Because, you know, they don't have a diagnosis, so it's unlikely that they are part of any national survey.
There's a lot of data on siblings. We have a partner organization called the Sibling Leadership Network. The Sibling Leadership Network. And they have a website, just siblingleadership.org. And on their website, they have a research page. And on that research page is a database of all the major sibling studies that have happened over the past, I would say, four or so decades. So we do have a lot of research on siblings. We need more. I'm always happy to partner with researchers. We're actually developing a program evaluation for SIB shops to get a little bit more information. In terms of a questionnaire, it kind of depends on what you want to measure. And so it really, if you're looking at like mental health outcomes, if you're looking at connection outcomes, you know, I think it really depends on what you're looking to measure. So we don't have like a generic, not a generic, but a general survey about, you know, what is your sibling experience like? So I'm not sure if I answered that question, but yeah, I think it really depends on what aspect of the sibling experience you want to study, because the sibling experience, like the human experience, is complex and varied, and having a sibling with support needs is just one facet of who we are, right? And so, yeah, but there's a lot of great sibling data out there, so check it out.
Thank you.
I'm struck in what you're saying by some of the generational differences. Most of my patients are older. Many of their siblings grew up in institutions. Many of them are not engaged in caregiving or in support. And when they are drawn in, sometimes they have attitudes from their generation that maybe would be different than ones that younger people might have. So I think that the role of sibling is going to evolve. And I'm wondering what do you have for adults, especially, you know, older adults over 50, over 40?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that's such a valid point, because when you think about, Clarissa, the way that people with disabilities themselves have been regarded, and how that has evolved over time, you know, from institutionalization to community integration to community inclusion, right? Like, there's a real progression there, and siblings have kind of been riding those waves too. And yeah, we hear from a lot of older siblings who say, I didn't even grow up with my sibling because they were in an institution. And so we don't really have a relationship. And then you have sort of siblings in the middle who, like myself, I mean, we were kids in the 70s, just when special education was kind of coming into its own. And so my brother's educational experience at that time was very much sort of, straddling two worlds, right? Like being part of the mainstream school, but also being segregated, and until they sort of figured out. I mean, and I think schools these days are still kind of trying to figure out what that looks like. So for the older siblings, you know, I would say that in our SibNet groups, so we have three groups online for siblings: SibTeen for the teens, Sib20 for the siblings in their 20s and maybe early 30s, and then SibNet is mostly our that is where most of our older adult siblings are. And there are many kindred spirits in that group who are who can relate to, you know, the experience that you talked about, Clarissa, and all the complicated feelings that can come along with that, you know, many, many times at the same time, you know, the mourning the loss of the relationship that could have been.
So another question from the audience: how can we help parents keep from having the siblings parentified?
It's such a great question. And I think it really comes back to acknowledging that siblings' natural inclination many times is to help and to protect. And of course, we want to celebrate those things, and we want to celebrate the kindness and the desire to be helpful. And we also want to do that in a way that recognizes that, again, that's not the only value that siblings bring to the family. And we don't want to just celebrate siblings for being such a great helper. And we want to, I give this example because I think it's so important and I think it's so helpful. I think when you see these little siblings, these little parents come in, especially in sib shops, we find them, they find us. And, you know, I think our inclination is to say something like, wow, you are such a good helper for your sibling, that you're that's so great of you, you know, and just sort of praise them and kind of give them a pat on the back. And I think instead, if we could just reframe that a little bit and say, wow, you really do a lot to support your brother or sister. What is that like for you? because that invites the possibility that, yeah, there are probably really great things about that, but there might be some not so great things about that. You know, if your sibling has a meltdown at school and you're the only person who can calm him or her down, right? And so you're always the person that the teacher comes to get to come into the classroom to calm that person down. It can feel really good to be the only person in the room who has the ability to fix the problem. Like, that feels great. Who doesn't feel great about, like, I'm coming in to save the day? And it also might be a bummer that they're missing their own class time, that they're being pulled out of the classroom. That might feel embarrassing. You know, it's a coin with two sides. And so I think we want to really acknowledge that for siblings, that yes, it can feel good to help, but it's also important to make sure that siblings stay in their lane. And I'll tell you a personal story very quickly. When I was probably in maybe late elementary school, maybe middle school, I'm trying to remember when I got really bossy, probably middle school. We were latchkey kids, right? In the 80s, we were home by ourselves after school. And I, at some point, decided that it was going to be my job to manage my brother and to, like, you know, keep an eye on him and make sure he didn't drink too much Pepsi or whatever. And so I would really boss him around. And as soon as our parents caught wind of this, you know, they sat me down and they said, Emily, we know you're trying to help, but you're the sister, right? We're the parents. That's our job. And I was at first a little embarrassed probably, but I was also tremendously relieved that I didn't have to do this, that this wasn't my job. And it was such an important reminder that, yeah, I could just kind of focus on, like, maybe myself not drinking too much Pepsi or whatever it is, right? So I think it's important to remember that it can feel both ways for siblings, and to kind of make sure that they know this is not their job. They're the, you know, they need to stay in their lane. You can say that in a loving way.
Wow.
That's a great story.
I just really appreciate all the information and the advocacy and the training that you've been doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much again for including siblings in this amazing event.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.